3P05, welcome back, guys. It's hard to believe how quickly we've moved through the content this semester. We don't have a lot of time left. We still have a couple more assignments. Some of you perhaps are just finishing up your third crisis response. You still got one more of those to come as well. I think at this point now you have a little bit of a better understanding of how these assignments are to be filled out, and also that they are relatively short and small in their scope and size. You've also got the community engagement report, which we're going to be talking about in a little bit here as well. I'll be giving you a full outline with regards to that assignment in the coming days as well. So your course readings have been posted as well for this week. Make sure you have a look at that. That's only one thing I would want to note to you here. Just a couple things about the form and the audio responses. It's so important to just keep doing. I know how frustrating it must be, especially if you're in more than one asynchronous course. The form and the audio response are a big part of your course grade here, and it's essentially a way of keeping you engaged. And we are into the stretch drive here of this semester. I think one of the hardest parts about these asynchronous courses is the fact that there's no essentially course component in a specific time and day, but the workload can overwhelm if you stack it up towards the end there. So if you can keep it up, if you can keep up that sort of routine you've developed, that's the best way to succeed here later on. If you've been doing it so far, in terms of those of you who are looking for feedback, I've had a meeting with a couple of you to sort of go over the fact that, look, if you're putting in effort here and you're giving your best shot here and you're not essentially just coughing up ChatGPT responses into those form responses, you're going to be doing just fine. If you've given a good effort on all of them here, it is not uncommon at all for students to receive those who've submitted with quality responses to receive 100 in those components. Okay, so just, I thought I would say that to all of you. I've had a meeting with some of you in office hours lately that have raised that concern regarding their performance so far in those components of the course grade. Today's topic is policy. Make sure you have a look at your course readings before you do your form and audio responses, but I will waste no more time. So let's start our discussion of policy right now. So I want to begin our discussion of nonprofit sport policy by first noting the fact that I'm aware most of you probably have taken 2P06, which is a sport policy course. You may have taken it with me, or you may have taken it with someone else. This might cause for a little bit of repetition here, but I think it's also important to have a little bit of review and recenter what it is to write policy, evaluate policy, and why it matters for nonprofit sport organizations. I also want to directly note the fact that many of you are going to be addressing the creation of policy in your work this semester with your nonprofit organizations. I think that's why it's really important that we have this discussion before we really get into the nitty-gritty here. Specifically, if you are a part of the North American Indigenous Games group, if you're part of the Canadian Weightlifting Federation group, if you're a part of the Grindstone Foundation group, if you're a part of all the groups, really, you're going to be dealing with policy at some level. But I know specifically with the Weightlifting Federation and the North American Indigenous Games groups, you're going to be dealing with policy creation and analysis in your work with them. There's some actual need for policy creation here and a policy evaluation. So that's how I wanted to start this discussion, by saying you might already know what this is, or you might have an idea of what this is, but let's apply it to nonprofits today. So on slide 2, if you're following along on the slides here, we talk about the role of policies in nonprofit sport organizations as a whole. The successful operation of sports organizations, both private and nonprofit, depends on the development, formulation, and execution of policies. Loosely defined as a statement of action and intention, policies undergird the operation of a successful nonprofit organization at the board level and in day-to-day operations. They are the bedrock for successful nonprofit organizations. If you ask anyone who governs them, if you ask anyone involved in the day-to-day operations of them, if you ask Rob, who's involved in that very role, he'll tell you that policies are extremely important. The creation of good policies, the implementation, the enforcement of policies at the board level and at the day-to-day operations level, this is extremely important. In our guest lecture from Jeff Schoenberg, he mentioned specifically this, that essentially you go into these organizations and you can tell when they're going to be successful, and he alluded to the fact that they essentially boils down to do these organizations have good policies? Now, over and over again, I found this certainly in 2P06, I wasn't always sure that we knew exactly what a policy was or how the policy creation process worked. Certainly, I don't think it's totally clear how that process would work for a nonprofit organization. So I think that the first thing we're going to do here is walk ourselves through why policies are important, why public policies are important specifically. And for that, I wanted a little bit of help. So I'm going to bring in a little piece of a lecture given by Amy Hanauer. And she's talking, and this talk that she's giving is from 2015, and she talks about how important policy is to our day-to-day lives.
We're humans. We're curious. So we wonder about the future, and we try to predict it. But if you're really curious about all of those seemingly unrelated questions I just asked, I can tell you one thing, one, that has an enormous impact on all of them. And that thing is public policy. And the problem is that policy is something about which our curiosity is often discouraged. By policy, I mean the rules and regulations that we and our elected officials put in place. And as citizens in a representative democracy, you have the right and the responsibility to help shape those policies. And they control everything from whether a three-year-old gets free preschool, to how much a company can pollute, to how much workers get paid, to whether I get to take a bus or have to drive from my home to my job every day. Now, here's the dirty little secret about public policy. It is very, very hard to change with individual action. Now, I know I am violating the first rule of speeches and of life. Nobody wants to be told that they don't have the power to change things. Everybody wants to know how they can make an impact. People want to dump ice on their heads. They want to shave their heads. They want to run in races. They want to have an impact themselves. People like me drive up to speeches like this, well, I walked, but they drive up to speeches like this with bumper stickers on their car that say things like, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever had. Well, I hate to break it to you, and I hate to break it to Margaret Mead who said that, but the fact is you often need a large group of people. Thoughtless people also have a lot of impact on our policy. You rarely get exactly what you want. And if you're someone like me, it is highly likely that there are moneyed interests on the other side of whatever it is that you're fighting for. So I'm sorry, it's not very inspirational. It's a little hard to fit on a t-shirt. However, here is the inspirational thing about public policy change. A teeny tiny change in public policy can make an enormous difference in all of our lives.
It's the time of the season. So Amy raises a lot of really important points there, specifically pointing out the fact that when you desire creating policy change, it takes a concerted effort of a great number of people. And if you're familiar with the sport policy course that either we took last semester or we're taking right now, or maybe you took it in years past, we detailed attempts to change Canadian sport policy. Whether that was lobbied through nonprofit organizations or whether that was taken on by the federal government, it takes decades. And there are specific factors that influence the creation of policy. But I think that Amy really brought up a lot of really important points about how important policy is to our daily lives, and in a way in which a lot of its influence on our daily lives are through latent factors, factors that are not immediately apparent. Something that's extremely important to consider when we're working with nonprofit organizations. A lot of the questions that we have about nonprofits, or why they work the way that they work, or why they are successful, or why they are unable to be successful, a lot of the answers lie in policy. So again, what is a policy? Loosely defined as a statement or action of intention, policies undergird the operation of a successful nonprofit organization. And how do they do this? Well, the first thing that they do when you're creating policy, and this is something that we're talking about now on slide 3, which is the policy process, how to create it. And most of the time, this is at the bedrock of the creation of the nonprofit organization, which is policy identification. What is the problem? What needs to be solved? That is a deceptively difficult thing to do. I think that this stage is so utterly important, and so important to keep in mind when you're addressing your nonprofit. Generally speaking, by the time you're working with a nonprofit organization, they have already gone a pretty long way down this road to identifying what the problem is. Many of them speak specifically about the problem that's being identified. Specifically, the Grindstone Award Foundation says not enough girls are having access to playing hockey in Canada. Our organization seeks to fix that problem. Now, if you're working for an organization that isn't problem-based like the Grindstone Award Foundation is, there may be policies that need to be created in order to address specific issues. So for instance, if we're trying to develop a social media policy for a nonprofit sport organization or for a professional sport organization or for any sport organization for that matter, the problem identification is a really, really, really crucial step. Because it's not just as simple as, okay, well, players are tweeting too much or players are sharing too much of themselves or embarrassing their franchise or what have you. Identifying what the problem is, and maybe that's about marketing, maybe that's about franchise valuation, maybe that's about organizational message. These are the sorts of things that are important. For instance, when you're trying to develop COVID policy, right? The problem is balancing health and safety for the most part against the freedoms of an athlete, right? So if you're working with the Canadian Weightlifting Federation, for instance, you're going to be helping develop or looking at COVID policies. Well, that takes a long time. It's not as simple as saying, well, the problem is COVID. Yes, well, we understand that that's the issue, right? But what is the problem that needs to be addressed? Well, we need a set of policies and procedures. Well, what are the problems with that? Well, they keep having to change, blah, blah, blah. You see the issue here, right? Identifying what the problem is not as simple as just looking and saying, well, what are the factors at play here? And let's just say the problem is COVID. Right. The issue is when you're creating good policy, you need to have a really acute understanding of what the problem is. For instance, if you're familiar with the COVID situation that occurred in the NBA, when they created the NBA bubble in 2020, the problem identified was we cannot control variables when traveling. That was the problem. And they successfully identified that as the problem. It isn't a problem so much about testing so much as it was about controlling variables. So the reason the NBA was able to have a successful bubble experience in the middle of a pre-vaccine pandemic was because they identified the problem successfully, which was controlling as many variables as possible was the real problem, right? So that's an example of how to identify a problem and create policies to address that problem. In order for the policy to be created or revised, and right now we're on slide 4 if you're following along, the issue must reach the institutional agenda where policymakers agree to discuss it. Defining the problem is a crucial step in this process and often is a large contributor to failed attempts of policy revision and creation. And I wanted to bring this step up immediately after hearing from our brief guest speaker there, because what she brought up there was extremely important. So often, the issues that are important to people, the public, when it comes to sport, when it comes to any issue of public policy, it doesn't even reach the correct ears. It's such a titanic struggle often to get your issue heard by those that can affect change on it, that this is, as our guest speaker alluded to, a extremely difficult and very important part of the policy process. If you cannot define the problem correctly, or if the problem is ill-defined or loosely defined, or in most cases, defined in a way that cannot be addressed through policy, it will never even reach the necessary ears. So when you're trying to identify in your nonprofit organization, what is the real goal here? Say I was saying to you, I want you to create a nonprofit that addresses the issue of, that tries to grow the game of basketball across North America. So you'd have to identify what the problem is there. Now, if you say that our policy creation or our position that we're starting from, the problem that we've identified is not enough people play basketball. Well, that doesn't really speak to the issue at hand here, right? If you're going to develop a nonprofit that addresses that large issue, you want to have identified a specific problem, right? So you want to say, for an example, you know, there isn't enough access to proper equipment, proper training, and proper coaching. And our nonprofit seeks to address those three issues. And you see there how a problem being identified helps tackle a much larger issue that on its whole isn't really easy to describe to a larger organization or to someone you're seeking funding for or to Canadian taxpayers, for instance, about how this is going to happen. So we've talked about this in the past, the last few classes, the creation of policy for the Olympics, for instance. If they say, look, we want to win gold medals, more gold medals, that's our issue. They identified the problem is we don't win enough gold medals. If they left it at that and said, we're going to just throw more money at everything else, that wouldn't have worked. But on the podium said, we don't win enough at home. We're not winning enough in general. Here's our specific steps. We're going to pay coaches this amount. We're going to have centralization programs, blah, blah, blah. That's how it sort of worked, right? So the idea is what there's a large issue at hand, but a correct and succinct identification of the problem is such an important part of the policy creating process. Step 2 is the formulation step, and this part is also extremely tricky. And at this stage, solutions for the defined problem are created. If a problem is poorly defined, creating an effective solution is exceptionally difficult. At times, policy solutions are created brand new. However, The most common strategy is to find existing policies and adapt them to the problem identified. This is golden advice for those of you that are going to be working on policy creation, revision, what have you, in your nonprofit organization. So again, if you're part of the groups that I've already mentioned, or even if you're not, you likely will be dealing with some aspect of policy. Listen up. Yes, it is possible, and yes, it is sometimes necessary to create policies from scratch with a blank Word doc and just hashing it out. But that is very, very, very rare, right? Most policies, no matter if it's public policy, whether it's sporting policy, what have you, is in process of adaptation. So that's good and bad news, right? The good news is, I'm not looking for you, if you're going to be creating brand new policy, to go and hash it out yourselves, which is, to be perfectly candid, extremely hard to do and something way beyond what I'd be looking for in your undergraduate degree here. But what we're looking for here is what policies have been written before that we can adapt. And I guarantee you, even issues that seem like there is absolutely no way we have a predecessor or a policy in place beforehand that could have foreseen a modern circumstance, I guarantee you we can look to adapt policies. If you think COVID has produced situations that we never have possibly imagined, right? There are existing policies. You'll see this actually in public policy more broadly. Once the mask mandates came out, they were able to say, look, this is actually not the first time we've had mask mandates in our own country, in our own cities. Have a look at these ones, right? These were from, you know, during the Spanish flu. There are normally historical precedents to go back on, right? When it comes to creating sport policy, especially when you think about what your problem is, if it's a problem of privacy, is it a problem of overreach? Is it a problem of abuse? Is it a problem of protection? You can use policies from other fields and other industries, and sometimes in other sports and other sporting organizations, you can adapt them to serve your purposes. That is the essence of the policy creation process in the modern world. It's about finding which policies in which organizations are the most relevant for yours. So that's extremely important to the policy creation process, is essentially finding the right ways to use, as right policies to use as source materials for when we move on. Now again, we're going to get into the final sort of steps of the policy creating process later on this week, but it's something that I really want you to think about here. We're steps 3 and 4, and the policy analysis task book we're going to get into in the second half of this week. But as I leave you for the first half of this week, I want you to consider, what is it that you know about policy and its role in a nonprofit, right? Dust off if you've taken that nonprofit course, go back in your mind and think to yourself, okay, what did we learn in sport policy? And how can I bring this to bear on this course and my experience working in these nonprofits, right? If you've never taken that course, that's totally okay. What is, when I say policy, or when I'm looking at policy, or when I think of these things, what comes to mind, right? I want you to have that moment of self-reflection, because I guarantee you, the notion of policy creation or analysis will become a part of your work with these organizations, because as we've heard from our guest speaker, as I've spoken to you about at length today, it is the bedrock of effective nonprofit organization management. Also, it's the bedrock of professional sport management too, if that's something you're interested in as well. So you're gonna need to know how this process works and how to make this process work for you. And that concludes the first half of our discussion of sport policy and its application to the nonprofit sports sector. So I like to sort of mixing it up sometimes where I put in your form and audio response questions to make sure you all are listening to these audio lectures as well. So this week's form question is coming right here at the end of our first half of our policy discussion. And it relates directly to what we were talking about today, which is problem identification. So in your form response, what I would like you to do is essentially go through the first step on the policymaking process as it relates to some of the issues that we've seen faced by nonprofit organizations in Canada in the very recent past. So again, in week 4, if you go back to your form responses or in the course readings from week 4, we had a fairly large and expansive list of some of the issues facing some of Canada's largest sporting nonprofits. What I'd like for you to do is I try your best to identify the problem there. What is the problem faced by these nonprofits? What I would recommend you not do is simply say abuse is the problem, right? Dig a little bit deeper. Is it a question of enforcement? Is it a question of, is it bad policy? Is there a situation where there's no policy written at all? Is there perhaps policies that existed prior to, but therefore were not enforced or needed to be updated or whatever? That's sort of what I'm looking for here. And the reason that I'm asking you to do this is to sort of address something that we began talking about last year. If you were in 2P06 last year, if you haven't taken that course, not a problem. something that you start doing when you're in your first couple of years of university, which is to say, describing problems, right? And this is something that I think many university courses are quite good at, which is to say, describing things that are wrong. But now, as you shift towards the end of your university career here in your third and fourth years, it's time to start actually addressing some of these issues. So now that we know what the problem is, that's fantastic, but we're going to take you now onto this journey of fixing the problems as you identify them. So that's the sort of task here right now, as I want you to identify what you think the problem is at the heart of the issues that we discussed in many of the nonprofit organizations from across Canada. And again, go back to week 4 if you need a refresher. But that's all I'm looking for this week's forum response. So again, make sure you have a look at those course readings. Make sure you have a nice format for your routines throughout the semester. And I am looking forward to reading these responses.